Welcome. I seem to recall opening many Dharma talks with the following words, and I'm about to do it again. These words are, I propose that all of us, all of us people, all of us sentient beings that might be buzzing around, also, we just want to be happy. We want peace, love, fulfillment, a sense of connection. Have you ever heard me say that before? I remember saying it before. And it just strikes me. I can't help saying it again. And I'll probably say it in the future too. Because I think it's like the bottom line. For me, it helps to remember what this whole thing of Buddha Dharma is all about. There's so many interesting facets of Zen and Buddha Dharma. It's infinite, the list, right? Like, how we play the drum and the bell, how we offer incense, how we clean the temple. All these things may be addressing this point of peace and happiness and fulfillment and freedom, but also, speaking for myself, I know that it's really easy to get distracted from what this practice is all about, why I came to it in the first place. There's so many other interesting things that are elements of it, don't you think? I think so. I love all those interesting things, but at least when I'm speaking from this seat, I want to just not distract myself or you from the fundamental point. And so the Buddha has all these teachings about this, right? And basically, a lot of the Buddha's teachings seem to be showing us the mistake that we're making kind of all the time as sentient beings. Again, sentient beings, I think, are those who want to be happy and free and live in love and connection and peace. In other words, Buddhas, I would propose, actually don't want those things. That's what makes us sentient beings. Because Buddhas are those things. So they don't feel any lack of fulfillment, any lack of love, any lack of peace and happiness and connection. But we, human sentient beings, all of us, I would propose, want this. And we want it. We want this peace and happiness and freedom in a reliable, sustainable kind of way, not sort of haphazardly. Although we'll usually settle for haphazard, intermittent happiness, don't we? And I'm into that too. I think that's part of being human, that even a human on the bodhisattva path to complete awakening, like we still like, conditioned happiness, temporary happiness too. I think that's fine as long as we remember that's not really, that doesn't really have anything to do with Buddha Dharma. So the radical thing that Buddha's offering is something that's actually reliable and sustainable. So first, Buddha points out our mistake by saying things like, which I'm sure everybody's heard, like all conditioned experiences. What I mean by experiences is anything conditioned. Experience is something that arises and ceases, and it arises and ceases dependent on conditions. And we're having one right now. We're having multiple, you might say, experiences of hearing and seeing at the same time, thinking and feeling at the same time. Or we could just call it one big conditioned experience. The Buddha says the conditioned experiences are always not permanent, not lasting. Experiences are not lasting. They're not, because they're not lasting, they're not ultimately satisfying. And because they're not lasting and not ultimately satisfying, they're not really our self. No experience I'm happening is myself. Self, we usually mean something that's always here. I think it's kind of the meaning of myself in the Buddha's time and in our time. Who I really am. So all experiences are not permanent. They're not ultimately satisfying. And they're not myself. So maybe first when we hear that kind of thing, it sounds kind of depressing. Is there anything other than experiences? And if all of them are not lasting, not ultimately satisfying, and not myself, then isn't this like a hopeless situation? So that would be a follow-up question I would ask is, well, is there anything going on here that's not an experience? Because every experience is ultimately unsatisfying. It's not what I'm looking for. I'm looking for satisfaction and fulfillment and peace, a sustainable, lasting peace, happiness, and freedom, and love, and connection. So if no experience is that way, is there anything that's going on that's not an experience? What do you think?
No.
No,
and yes.
No and yes. Well,
you got the range.
Yeah. I would imagine those who would say no would be like, well, anything I can possibly imagine that's ever happened is an experience. So, and I would agree with that. Yeah, everything that's ever happened to me is just an experience that comes and goes. And those who say yes, there is that which is not an experience. What would you say, Ziggy?
The all-pervasive, ever-unchanging love, and that's Buddha nature, or I would say God, that's an essence that's never changing and always is, that whether I experience it or not, it is.
Yeah, exactly. So in a way, both are kind of have a truth to them. Both know, no experience will ever work out. It's what we call samsara. And there is that which is not an experience, which is ever present, which is always working out, actually. And that, yes, Kathy.
Well, it's just funny because they each need each other.
Hmm. In a way,
the only way we can have any, we can even say that there's this thing that's not experienced is through experience.
Yeah, well, when we're talking about it.
We're not disembodied, ephemeral, wind that just.
Yeah.
We're experiencing.
And if we were disembodied, ephemeral wind or something like that, it wouldn't matter anyway. Because we wouldn't be sentient beings. which today I'm defining sentient beings as those who want to be happy. I think the wind actually doesn't want to be happy because it's not lacking anything. But we sentient beings have an issue. And therefore, yeah, this teaching about that which is not an experience is offered to us sentient beings, the ones who are into experiences. And so we can say it in many ways, right? And we could say that which is not an experience and ever present. This practice focus, we've been calling it radiant light. It's been the theme for this past month. Will continue to be the theme for a few more days. Radiant light, the Zen ancestors spoke of as that which, as opposed to experiences that are not that are not permanent, this radiant light, we could say, is not changing like all the experiences. This radiant light is not coming and going. So it's different from all those experiences. Would we even go so far as to say it's not impermanent, but it's permanent? Not as permanent as something, because it's not a thing, but it's not changing. And likewise, if all experiences are not ultimately satisfying or fulfilling, this radiant light is itself satisfaction and fulfillment. And if we say all experiences are not myself, this radiant light, we could say, actually is myself. In fact, the Zen ancestors Changsha and Dogen, who comments on Changsha's saying, call this Jikko Komyo, the radiant light of the self, the radiant light of myself, yourself. Jikko Komyo. Two different names for the same reality. We could call it radiant light, kind of poetically, and we could call it myself, kind of existentially. Myself is when I look for what is it that's always the case. Experiences are coming and going, but there is an ever-present experiencing of them. Ever-present knowing. And this experiencing or knowing, when we look very carefully and experientially, we find that it doesn't seem to change. If we say it's changing along with the experiences, then I would say we're subtly making this knowing into another experience. Because all experiences are coming and going, but the experiencing I'm speaking of is the same with every experience. Whether we're totally depressed or totally ecstatic, the experiencing of those two experiences is identical. This is something that we have to explore ourselves, and I would say not just once, but over and over again, these words are just fingers pointing to the radiant light of the moon. We have to actually investigate, as Dogen says over and over in almost every essay he writes. He says, thoroughly investigate this matter. Not conceptually, but it starts with these fingers pointing, because it's so strange, I think, that as humans, you could say the most obvious part of being a sentient being is actually not that we're always having experience, but that there's experiencing going on, that there's this ever-present knowing awareness. It's like, in a way, you could say it's the most obvious reality of being a sentient being, and yet it's almost always completely overlooked because we're so into experiences. Experiencing, knowing, seems to be nothing at all. That's why it might sound abstract or like just some weird idea. It might seem to be nothing at all because it's not a thing. It's not an experience. And though it seems to be nothing at all, when we investigate more carefully, we find that actually, rather than nothing, it's actually everything. It's not even something in between. Experiencing this knowing, this light of knowing, is actually everything. It is, all experiences are nothing other than the knowing of them when we look deeply. So therefore, there's a possibility. Luckily, the Buddha doesn't just say we're stuck because all experiences are not permanent, they're not satisfying, and they're not myself. But this is, of course, challenging. I find quite challenging to attend to the one reality that's not another experience. But that's why I love Zen. I love that it's challenging, so I can never stop. And that it doesn't give easy answers, because if it did, that kind of wouldn't make sense. The Buddhas and ancestors had to devote great energy and diligence to thoroughly investigating this matter and clarifying it. So when there's a poet that's quoted by several different teachers I've come across, this particular poem by Percy Shelley. He's English, I think, right? British? Maybe 100 years ago? 1800s? Shelley wrote this poem. I think it's part of a longer poem. Life, like a dome of many-colored glass, stains the white radiance of eternity. So life is another name for what I'm calling sentient beings, us people, sentient beings. Life is like a dome of many-colored glass, like the stained glass window in the Dokusan room out there, which stains the white, or we could even say colorless, radiant light of eternity. The colorless, radiant light of eternity is that which doesn't come and go. But life is like a stained glass window that lets this light shine through. We had some conversation a few weeks ago, I think, about, is it the light coming through us, or is it the light is us? This poem is a little bit sounding more like we are the many-colored dome through which the colorless light of eternity is stained. And you could say stain could have a negative connotation, as kind of like our life is kind of defiles the white radiance of eternity. But we could also hear stains as discolors. Our life beautifully colors the white radiance of eternity. And that's the beauty of our individual lives, Each of us is like a stained glass window. Life, like a dome of many-colored glass, stains or colors the clear, radiant light of eternity. I guess a nice description of a sentient being, according to Zen Buddhas and ancestors. And we could say this light that is colored by our, you could say, our minds that create the sense of me over here and you over there and all of that. This light is expressing itself as us, and it's expressing itself as all experiences which are happening to us. In other words, the radiant light of the self, jiko, komyo, this ever-present knowing, awareness, is all there really is. That's why we call it the ultimate truth, as opposed to the conventional truth is a kind of a truth, but it's kind of just the truth of appearances, like I'm over here and you're over there. And life, sentient being life, it's like a conventional truth, this dome of many colored glass. But the ultimate radiance of this light expresses itself, we can say, as everything. So if I see a flower, there really isn't a flower other than the seeing of it. And the seeing is an aspect of this light. The experiencing of the flower. The experiencing is what we call the radiant light of the self. The flower is what we call the experience. But the experience of the flower, the seen flower, and the heard words are nothing other than the experiencing of them. Therefore, if the experiencing is just we call radiant light, then the flower is also radiant light. Right? Does that you follow? The flower is nothing other than radiant light. This radiant light, this present radiant light right now we call experiencing, takes the form of flowers and words and people and zendos and dogs and cats and snowflakes and grass tips and windows and doors and doorknobs and keyholes and keys and keychains and little things that hang on the end of keychains. All those things are nothing other than the knowing of them, are they not? I'm not talking about some mystical realm that we don't have access to. Right? Talking about right now. Yes, Rachel.
Well, I'm trying to hold off my question, but as you keep repeating this critical point, I feel like I'm gonna get left behind if I don't ask it.
Please ask. Quick.
Would there be a difference in our spiritual development between saying an experience is nothing other than the experiencing of it, or
yes,
if you all agree to that,
yes,
I think that's what you said.
Yes,
and it would be impossible to know whether an experience is any more or less than the experiencing of it?
Are those two different?
Two different things.
So one is called knowing that an experience is nothing more than the experiencing of it. That's the one.
Are we doing that?
Yeah. Yeah. Or
whether it is being unable to know whether there is anything more or less than the experiencing of something.
Well, we could say, to me they don't sound different. Do they sound different to you?
Totally different.
One is saying, we don't know if there might be something other than experiencing. Yeah, we can't know if there's, we can't know, right? Yeah, if there is something other than experiencing, right? I agree, we can't know, and I would even propose the way science is advancing these days, we might think that soon we might be able to know. I would propose we will never, ever, ever be able to know that little difference. That's because, and again, you have to contemplate that and see that it's literally impossible because it would have to be known by experiencing.
That's like in the Incentions when he says, can you hear the Incentions, Master? And he goes, well, if I could, I wouldn't tell you because you can't hear it, and that's why you're asking me. So, you know, I think there's that piece there. That
yeah, there's something related there. Well, can we not, though, directly confirm right now that it's impossible for any of us or anyone ever to experience something other than what's being experienced?
Well, I think that's true, but I also think that when you learn about certain kinds of science where they do show you things that you don't know, and I'm not enough of up on my reading to know what those things are. But, you know, there are those things where when they do tests and they
yeah,
show,
like quantum entanglement.
It exists. Just because we can't perceive it doesn't mean it doesn't exist. And scientists know it's still representational.
Yeah, well, what I'm saying is that's the key point, is that all those things, spooky action at a distance and quantum entanglement, we know those things through the knowing of them. We don't know exactly how it works, but those spooky action at a distance is only an experience of sentient beings. That's what I'm saying. If there is spooky, and maybe Rachel's saying, maybe there's a spooky action at a distance that's not just the experience of some measurements that people can do in a laboratory or through mathematics. I think what you're asking is, can we leave it open that behind the veil of what we can experience, there may be something else? I agree. I don't think it is different for our spiritual development, if that's was your question, right?
Your logic seemed to build off of there is nothing more than the experience.
For us sentient beings.
Well,
yeah. We will...
is a whole other story.
Well, that's all we have. That's, you know, I'm just talking about, like a little bit like Kathy's maybe referring... I'm talking to sentient beings, like Dongshan. Was it Dongshan said that? One of his teachers said. I teach for sentient beings. Otherwise, it's not really an issue.
And yet, we do say that, we do talk about the sentients, and we do talk about the language of these sentients, and we say, well, that is what they're, it's not an object that the ear can hear. So we're sounding like we have some sense that exists.
Yeah, I mean, that's a whole other issue, because like you were saying before, insentient beings don't have preferences like happiness, but
yeah.
I think they do. I've seen water constantly sink below this point.
I guess when I speak of wanting happiness and fulfillment, I'm speaking more like on an emotional level. Of course, there's cause and effect playing out. But I'm thinking, this whole thing is prefaced with the original statement was, like, this is a Dharma talk for sentient beings. And I don't give talks to rivers. And partly because I don't think they need them. But I think... What's that? Yeah, the river can talk to me. Exactly. Yeah, there's a teaching that the Buddha's, one Zen ancestor said, the Buddhas are always teaching Dharma in the midst of fierce flames. And then his Zen friend said, actually, it's that the Buddhas are always sitting in the midst of fierce flames, and the fierce flames teach them the Dharma, and they sit there and listen. So, but at any rate, I think this point of I think this is an important point that when I say things like the flower is nothing other than the experiencing of it, I'm talking about a human thing here. I don't want to make a kind of ontological statement about the existence of flowers. I'm trying to just speak from the experience of being human that we are having right now and that we will always be having. For us, there will never be a flower other than the experiencing of it. Whether there is some real flower outside of our experiencing, I think doesn't matter, actually. This is a teaching for sentient beings who think, because I do. I imagine you do because I do. I think, usually, even right now, talking this way, I'm looking at that flower, and I'm sort of, because I'm talking about this particular Dharma right now, almost down with that it's nothing other than the experiencing of it. But if I forget that teaching for a split second, I go back to the habit that I've had for approximately infinity eons of thinking that flower is not just the experiencing of it for me. And that habit that I've had for infinite eons is, according to some teachers of our tradition, the root of non-fulfillment, non-peace, non-happiness, non-freedom. So that's all I'm talking about. Yes.
So, just so we can kind of carry on with this conversation about radiant light.
Yeah.
In order for me to be comfortable with that, I would have to say there's no way I can say as a truth that plant is radiant light. That's more that we have to, if we're really going to be honest, say is another story.
So can I stop there for a second and say, the way I'm talking about it, there's no faith at all involved in this.
There's no
faith necessary.
Faith.
It's not a leap of faith at all.
I'm calling for a leap of faith.
No. But I'm calling for not a leap of faith. I'm calling for, like, before we leave the Zendo tonight, every one of us will directly confirm that this flower is nothing but radiant light. So I think, so first,
lock
the doors. First we have to define terms, right? Radiant light is just this poetic expression, right? For this ever-present, knowing awareness.
Or
this one.
Or this ever-present, not knowing, unknowable.
Well, let's not go there quite yet.
I have to.
Before
that's
you,
my base, that's but, my ground.
Before you go there,
okay.
Let's just try this one on, is, you know, to look back and see what is it that's experiencing our conversation right now and our words and me and you. Is it not this? Is it not present? Is it not knowing? And is it not aware?
And is it not mysterious?
Well, first, can you confirm this point?
Yes, I can.
Okay. Are you really? Like
well, the mystery remains.
But first, is there not something? Is there not a presence that's knowing and aware right now in your experience?
So it seems.
We've got to go further. I'm proposing we go further and say, this is something confirmable right now. It's not something seeming. And in fact, I would say, I would even go further, this might sound strange, but it's the only thing that's not seeming and up for conjecture. It's the only thing that's really directly 100% confirmable, is that we're aware right now. Like I brought up this example before of, we may be dreaming, we may be in some strange dream or virtual reality, and I'm up for the possibility that we might be, but even if we were, there, we know that there's an awareness of this dream right now. And that's the one that I'm saying is, it's the bottom line. We can't go any deeper than this. We can't say, well, maybe or maybe not I'm aware. I mean, are we aware? If you can hear these words I'm proposing, we're aware.
So,
I mean, are you down with this part so far?
I accept that, yes, because why not? And then, two, supporting that and beneath that, the ground of that is, I don't know and I never will know, which we just agreed upon also.
Well, what we could say is, if we first can confirm 100%, and hopefully, as you're listening, raise your hand at some point if you are not confirming this 100%. But I'm talking about this ordinary, ever-present knowing of our experience. We just call it experiencing. Like, are you experiencing right now? And that, I think we can confirm 100%. And then we could ask, what is this experiencing? What is this ever-present knowing awareness? And then we can say, actually, I don't know what it is.
Right.
Then it's a total mystery.
Right.
So, but it's not a vague mystery. It's a mystery about this present knowing. So it has two sides.
I mean, the thing is that if this light gets thrown into it, it starts to have a taint to it, because it sounds like someone has an answer. Oh, it's light. Well, no, you've already said, well, we're being poetic. But if it slides over into, I have the truth, and the truth is this pervading, this light, I'm gone, I'm lost, I'm not with you.
Well, I'm talking about, I am in a way of saying, we got this truth. And it's coming packaged in words, so that taints it a little bit, like that's the dome of many colored glass that's staining the radiance of the light, because we're talking about it. But nevertheless, we can confirm, just in the realm of language here, that there is, if we know anything at all, if we've ever known anything at all in this life, I feel, this is what I can say I know, is that I have been experiencing my whole life. All the experiences in my life, maybe faulty memories, maybe kind of vague, I'm actually not so sure about any of that. But the one thing I'm sure of is that I am aware right now, and I can't remember any time when I haven't been aware, or I've never experienced not being aware. Yeah. And I would propose this is the same for all of us. So that's not, and then the mystery part comes in when we say, if we start to investigate, let's try to get a hold of this. Of this light, of this radiant light. Let's try to like package it and pinpoint it and say, what is this self? Then we see that's impossible. That's totally unknowable. That's ungraspable. It's boundless. It's sizeless. It's spaceless. It's timeless. It's emptiness. But I'm kind of pushing this a little bit, because I feel like if we just go to like, it's all inconceivable, so just stop talking about it, then I think we miss the direct confirmation of this ever-present light. We don't know what it is, but we can directly verify and confirm. Not only, I would say, it's not only that we can directly verify and confirm, each of us is constantly and unceasingly verifying and confirming it just by being alive. Yes,
I think that the term pure awareness is the best, because if all the other terms have, I'm kind of with Richard on this, you know, they open the door to all this interpretation and
I mean, call it whatever we want.
Yeah, but the pure awareness.
Pure awareness,
like,
somebody.
It's almost like secular. I mean, it doesn't get into lies and prisms and God. It's like pure awareness. And you can't argue with that if you're alive or aware.
I hope we can't argue with it, yeah. But some people might say.
If you enter too much into explanation, then you're in trouble.
Well, some people might say pure awareness is too substantial, too, actually. But it's for whatever works for different people. So for tonight and for always, it seems like when the Zen people are talking about radiant light, there's nothing mystical or ethereal or cosmic about this. It's called ordinary mind. But for tonight, let's just assume when we're using the term komyo or jiko komyo, it's totally ordinary. And yet, it is actually totally ungraspable at the same time. It's ever present, and we don't know what it is, but it's undeniable, and it's not hidden. I mean, in a way, we have this story that we've been exploring. You and Men said every one of us has a light, but when you look for it, it seems to be hidden and dark and obscure. And what is everyone's light? He asked the assembly, and no one could say, which is pretty good that they couldn't say, because you can't say. But he said, "Want me to tell you? It's the flower on the altar." It's the Buddha hall, he said. It's the Buddha hall, the main gate, and the kitchen. So that's what the light is. When we look back for it in this direction, inward, it's total mystery. We can't see it. But when we look at the flower, it is nothing other than the knowing of the flower. We have synonyms here. Knowing, awareness, and light, and the self are four synonyms for tonight. And so these flowers, and you can explore how those are nice, are common sense synonyms. They're not arbitrary. They're important to see how they're synonyms. But from that point of view, the flower is the knowing of the flower. For me, the flower is the awareness of the flower. The flower is the self, is another name for this knowing. The flower is myself. And this is not, again, some like mystical breakthrough Zen thing. This is just right now for us, for each of us. When we look at the flower, it is ourself. And it is also called light. So from this point of view, I'm glad Kathy brought up, and she's here, the teaching of the insentient, because another essay where Dogen mentions komyo is in the Jijiyu Zamai. He says, grass, trees, and lands which are embraced by this teaching, the teaching that we're talking about, grass, trees, and lands which are embraced by this transformation, this reality, together radiate a great light, dai komyo, and endlessly expound the inconceivable profound dharma. So we chant that once a week. And it's the teaching of the insentient, isn't that? Grass, trees, and lands, and flowers, and Buddha halls, and kitchens, and main gates, which are embraced by, included within, this ever-present awareness, together they radiate a great light. And you could say they are the radiance of the one great light, but it's a little bit a further step to say that they radiate the light, and therefore that's how they constantly expound the inconceivable profound dharma to us. So if we see a flower in this way, that it is the radiant light of the self, that's when I would propose for tonight, this is a further playing and riffing on this teaching of the non-sentient. I think when we see the flower, the non-sentient flowers in this way, that's when they're teaching the Dharma to us. We see that they are us. So I would propose, this is different from saying the flowers have a mind. And it's also different because in this dharma, I'm saying that I don't have a mind either. Zen teaches no mind. sentient beings don't have minds. Flowers and rocks don't have minds. But the light expresses itself as sentient beings and flowers. So we could say, I am the light, you are the light, and the flower is the light. But that's, or even, I am mind, you are mind, I'm okay with that. But that's very different to me than saying, I have a mind, and rocks and pebbles have mind. Just like when Dogen says, in his Buddha Nature essay, he says, he quotes the Nirvana Sutra that says, all sentient beings completely have Buddha nature, and he turns the phrase and says, the sutra is a little bit off. And Dogen says, it's really that all sentient beings completely are Buddha nature. That hair's breadth difference is like the distance between heaven and earth. Sentient beings, I would propose, don't have Buddha nature. They don't have mind. Rocks and pebbles don't have Buddha nature and have mind. But sentient beings are Buddha nature. Rocks and pebbles are Buddha nature. They are light. And this light, we might say that my light and your light are two different lights. We could say from the point of mind, we can say we have different minds, we have different storehouses, we know different stuff. But the light, maybe I've heard this before, but I'm proposing that experientially, again, we can confirm, or we can sort of, it's almost like verifying, I think, that we really share this one light. Because this is all about sharing, right? This is, we feel separate because we don't share the one light. We yearn to know that we are the one light. And here's the proof. But you have to pay attention. Is that if there were different lights, if we each had different lights, if we had different awarenesses, then there would have to be something, however slight, to some objective quality in each of our awarenesses to distinguish them as being mine and yours. Could you follow that? So if you're looking at two blades of grass that look identical, you could say, are they the same or different? We say, they're a little bit different because if we look closely, there's a little speck of dust on this one that's not on this one. That's called an objective quality to identify the fact that they're two different things. So you could say, in order to confirm or even have the slightest belief that we have separate awarenesses, we would have to find some objective quality in awareness that would distinguish it, my awareness from your awareness. And then we might leap to, well, I'm thinking of the number three right now, but what are you thinking? Number two. There, that's an objective quality. And I would say that's called an experience. We have different experiences constantly, right? But the experiencing awareness has nothing to do with, it's just the knowing of the three in my mind and the knowing of the two in your mind. The knowing has nothing to distinguish it. Do you follow that? This is a really good one. Yeah. It's like another minute. So let me just make, we can talk more at tea, but let me just try one more time because that's why I say we have to thoroughly investigate. Does it make, can you just follow that, this point that if we have separate awarenesses, there must be something in our awareness that's different, something, the awareness must have some objective quality that's different. Your awareness must have something that distinguishes it from my awareness. Can you follow that? This is the logic. If there's no distinguishing quality whatsoever, then we have no evidence for there being different awarenesses. And now we look for one. Can you find any of the awareness? We can find content of our minds, experiences are totally different. But the knowing of them, is it not identical? Is not me looking at this book, the knowing of this book, and you looking at that flower? We're having different experiences, but is the knowing of them have any difference whatsoever? The awareness of them? That's the point to investigate.
I mean, my answer is no, right?
That is the right answer, but this is something that, again, we can confirm ourselves. I would say we must confirm if we want to be actually like lasting, sustainable happiness, freedom, peace, and connection and love in the very midst of unhappiness, total depression, bodies falling apart, old age, sickness, and death. That stuff's going to happen no matter what. But we have to find that which is not born, doesn't die. And I think this is a way to find it. Sorry it's so hard. It's the kind of thing that I think it does take time, and I just wanted to mention, so I'll just mention this thing that happened in ancient days, that next week our Shuso Richard is going to bring up this thing that happened a long time ago. I hope he will. It's when Bodhidharma met the emperor. Yeah. And emperor asked, what's the highest meaning of the holy truth, of the ultimate truth? And Bodhidharma said, empty. There's nothing holy or unholy. And the emperor didn't get it because these things are hard, right? As we see. And so the emperor asked again, well, who is this facing me? And Bodhidharma said, I don't know. You're down with that one, right? I don't know. Or another translation that Tenchin Roshi, my teacher, brought up a couple weeks ago, is literally you could translate this phrase, not knowing, as not dualistic consciousness, which nobody translates it that way, but
there's no poetry.
There's no poetry in it. But the character is what is used for vijnana. So who is it facing me? It's not dualistic consciousness. So that's another twist on the story. And I hope you'll come and ask the Shuso some questions.
No.
Okay. Beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable. I vow to become it.